Hello and welcome to another episode of the Cultural Colchester podcast. I'm Tim Young and I have another brilliant guest with me today, and he really needs no introduction, but I suppose I've got to give him one really. So let's do the old drum roll. It is Nigel Hildreth, MBE. Hello, Nigel.
Hello there.
Thank you for coming on. Now, shall we start with that? You are a member of the most excellent order of the British Empire. That must have been quite an honour. It is an honour, but, you know, a personal honour.
It was indeed. And I still haven't forgiven my wife for keeping it quiet for 2 years.
They have to, don't they?
They do, yes, because you have to. I'm going through a similar process, and you have to nominate someone. And it takes about 2 years before they go through all the panels and everything else. Then you get this envelope arrive on your front door's mat, which says from the office of the cabinet office. Now, my kids saw that envelope and said, "Well, are you a spy, Dad?" Which is quite fun. But no, and then it says, "Would you like to be recognised? Or you can decline the offer at that stage." And I thought, well, I can't decline it, so there we went for it. Yes.
Did you go to the palace and everything?
Oh yes, it was interesting because it coincided with a number of other things, which serendipity all came together. But the first thing is you're only allowed three guests. Now, with three children and a wife, who do you leave out? I thought of doing a raffle, and I thought, you know, sort of
draw straws
or highest bids, but that didn't sit. And I thought, I'm going to write and just say, could I bring one extra guest, my, and bring my wife and three children? And they just turned around and said, yes, sure.
Oh, brilliant!
Which other people I understand who didn't even ask were sort of really in a very difficult position regarding that.
Must have been a memorable day for
you. It was a memorable day. We went up there. And we went to the palace, and it was Prince Charles who made the award.
Excellent.
And he chatted for a little bit, saying, "I can understand you're doing music in Colchester, and it's very worthwhile."
So he does his research.
Oh, yes. He's very much, they know who you're talking about by that stage.
And for services to music, was it?
It was services to music education.
Oh, right. Okay.
Which is absolutely appropriate because of, you know, the work I've done with youth orchestras and...
Well, let's start there then. So yeah, when did your teaching career begin?
All right, well...
When?
I left school in 72, so by 75 I'd finished my degree at Sheffield University. I then went on to do a postgraduate certificate education at what was then Sheffield City College. And then we're doing teaching practices in various schools in Sheffield.
Was that when David Blunkett was running the show in Sheffield?
I expect so. I wasn't really aware of that, to be absolutely honest.
Flying the red flag over Sheffield City
absolutely.
Hall.
Absolutely. We had very cheap transport. Mm-hmm. It was very good to get on the bus. You get out to the moors for £1, you know. It was really very, very good. Anyway, so I did teaching in Sheffield, and then... I continued. I had a job, actually, in Sheffield, mm-hmm. at Hindhouse Comprehensive School, which is an amazingly attractive school. It's got the Tinsley Viaduct on one side, the mm-hmm. motorway going over, and a cemetery on the other. I mean, you know, it was quite something.
Yes, I can imagine.
To add to that, they also discovered blue asbestos in the building, so we had to close down one building and actually do a shuttle transport into the middle of the city to an old derelict school, which was quite something. Anyway, I did that, and then whilst I was teaching part-time at Hindhouse School, I also did a master's degree in music, in composition and thesis. My compositions, I submitted some a viola concerto and various other pieces, and also my... as part of that was a thesis. My thesis was on the political influences upon the music of Dmitri Shostakovich.
Oh, right.
So I had to do lots of research, some of it in Russian, which was quite interesting because I had done a little bit of Russian at school.
Okay.
But it was using that Russian just to find out whether it said Shostakovich on the page or not.
You might have to send me that thesis because that sounds interesting.
Well, it is very interesting, but sadly, he died in the year that I was doing it. I say that sadly because suddenly a wealth of material was published. And I could have even stopped and started again because there was so much more material.
Yeah.
I mean, for example, some of his symphonies, I had to go to very rare public libraries which had copies of some of his symphonies. I mean, the common ones like the Fifth Symphony, the Tenth Symphony were available, but things like the Second Symphony were not. And that was quite interesting.
Well, you know that I'm more familiar with the work of the Sex Pistols than Shostakovich.
Yes.
Maybe I ought to check him out.
Well, but maybe. I think he's really good.
Do you come from a musical family, Nigel?
Strictly speaking, no. My grandfather could play the violin, so I understand.
Okay.
But I never met him. He died before I was born.
Yeah.
My mother played the recorder and the guitar and was very keen on music.
Mm-hmm.
My father, as he always used to say, played the record player. So my upbringing was him putting a piece of music on the record player and saying, right, Nigel, who's the composer? And I had to get that right. And when I got the composer right, then he would go into, he got to the stage where he was saying, which orchestra is it? And who's the conductor? And he had several versions of these pieces. You know, I mean,
so he was a music fan. He was a classical music fan.
He was very much a classical music fan. He, when I was fairly young, decided that he was going to give up smoking. And when he gave up smoking, he actually spent all of his money, instead of on cigarettes, on records. And he joined something which was called the Classics Club.
Really?
Which had recordings, but they weren't the frontline orchestras. They were things of the Bayerischer Rundfunk Orchestra playing something rather than the Berlin Philharmonic. And he therefore had hundreds and hundreds of LPs, which he used to
vinyl play. LPs. Those were the days, weren't they?
They were all vinyl. It was vinyl, and also we had a reel-to-reel recorder.
Wow.
Oh, yes, it was
fantastic. That so do you think that influence is what inspired you to get into music? And
well, without a doubt. I mean, you know, I learned the recorder and could read music before I read. So I was reading music and was coping with that and didn't see any need to read all these words and things. I just looked at the pictures and made up stories, which really infuriated my teachers.
So you could read notes before you could read words?
Yeah. When I went to primary school, I can remember it quite clearly. There was a girl who was also a daughter of another teacher,
mm-hmm.
because my mother was a primary school teacher. And she and I could both play the recorder better than anyone else in the school, and that includes the teachers. So, you know, it was quite something. We just had. So the recorder was my first start of it. Then I learned the piano.
Yeah.
And I had piano lessons with a variety of teachers, some of whom were very good.
In Colchester, are you Colchester lad?
No.
Where are you from?
This is where I have to admit to being a foreigner. It's funny because when I did a display for the Twinning Society at a food and drink festival, this guy came up to me and said, tell me about his twinning. And I said, well, we're twinned with Wetzlar in Germany, Imola in Italy, and Avignon in France. He says, you're not from around here, are you? I said, no. He said, well, I think you should go back to where you came from. I said, well, actually, that's only Hertfordshire, so, you know, it's not that far.
No, so you're a Hertfordshire boy?
I am.
Not even an Essex boy?
Stevenage, Newtown.
Stevenage.
Yeah, I was one of the first group, you know, sort of people that were born in Stevenage in the Newtown.
Really?
In the corporation houses that were there.
Wow. That's interesting.
Yeah.
How long did you, and you stayed there till you
until were, I was 18, yes.
And then you went to
university, up to Sheffield.
What drew you to our magnificent, historic, wonderful borough of Colchester?
Oh, well, yeah, the jobs, basically. I first of all, when I left Sheffield in 77, I got a job at Headingham School.
I know it.
And I went to that wonderful, I mean, it was a fantastic rural comprehensive, absolutely full range of abilities and backgrounds, fantastic school to teach at. And I was assistant there in the music department, learned my trade there, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
And after a year and a half there, I was sort of virtually headhunted to go to Stanway School, Which, of course, they would say that's not Colchester either, but, you know.
Stanway people would say that, indeed. The little village.
The village of Stanway, yes. And I went there in, as I say, just the 79, going into 1980 was when I took up my post in January.
Mm-hmm.
And I was there for 7 years. And then, of course, 87 was when the Sixth Form College was created. And I applied then to be head of performing arts. Well, it was creative and performing arts in those days.
Yeah.
It included the art department.
And you stayed there until retirement.
Did stay there for 39 years, yeah. Yeah.
But you retired when? 2015, was it?
Something like that, yes. It was, yeah. It's 5-6 years ago, yeah.
And you haven't stopped since?
Well, they say that musicians don't retire, they just go out of tunes.
Excellent. And let's get on to some of your famous alumni. Shall we start with Britpop? I was a bit old for Britpop, but obviously Blur and Oasis were massive at the time, and it all fitted in with New Labour and all that. And Blur, of course, you will forever, whether you like it or not, be associated.
No, I'm proud of them. Proud of
with Damon and his band. So how was he an ordinary pupil, or could you see that he stood out from the gang?
Both Damon and Graham stood out from the ordinary. They were both very talented musically. Damon was a composer. He played the piano and the violin. He played in the Colne Valley Youth Orchestra. He was one of the founder members. He played in the school orchestra. He was also, as I say, as a pianist, quite sort of interesting and liked improvising and making up things. And he went for lessons on playing jazz as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, Damon was out of the ordinary. He was a little bit headstrong. He was certainly knew what he was doing. And there were occasions when I had to get quite shouty with him. But
shouted at Damon Albarn.
Absolutely. And there were times afterwards he said, I thank you for doing that because you wanted the standards to be high. And I heard a snippet of a rehearsal that he was doing with a group of people. And I thought, gosh, that sounds like me. Shouting at the people to get it right. Yeah. I mean, he wasn't shouting them in any nasty way. It's just to say, no, that's not right. Let's do it again. Let's get it right.
So did he at some stage come to you and say, Mr. Hildreth, I want to be in a band?
No.
You knew he was going places?
No, we knew he was going places, but he went off to do drama.
Ah, right.
He went off to E15 to do drama. And there was another youngster who we knew, family knew, who was also at E15. So when he went out his first year at E15, he told us that he was doing production of Threepenny Opera, which I love.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, right, why don't we go down there and we'll meet up with you afterwards and take you out for a curry. So this girl, Katrina, and Damon, we met up with and we took him out. And it was interesting that was the point at which he started to say, I actually don't want to be the actor, I want to be the musician. And he got some work experience with the Berliner Ensemble. So, I mean, you know, you can't sort of fault that, really.
Not really.
So he realised at that point that there was something in the music side of things. And, of course, I do often listen to some of Blur's stuff and think there's an element of that musical theatre in there. There's an element of that sort of Brecht Weill.
Well, I'll have to listen again now. Because I don't know Brecht Weill. So.
Well, there's an element. I mean, I wouldn't say it's the whole thing, but there's an element. There's also an element of a lot of British music.
Yeah.
Because Damon studied A-level music.
Yeah.
With me. Yeah. I say he studied it. He didn't pass it, but he did study it.
He passed his A-level music.
Well, if I tell you that he turned up with the wrong scores to the exam, it doesn't help, really. It's part of the organisation. His mother, Hazel, lovely lady, said to me, she said, you know, at one point, look, he's going to go to drama. He's going to be in that. He's not going to do the music. I know you feel he ought to do music, but I don't think he will. He's going to be drama. Well,
the rest is history.
Yes.
But both does Graham, he keep in touch, Nigel?
Not regularly, no. I mean, he's fine.
But if you contacted him, he would...
Oh, yes. Yeah, if I... I had up until recently a very good line of communication in that his secretary was another former pupil of mine. It goes like that, I'm afraid.
Yes.
And she, I would send an email and then she would get an answer for me or whatever. And Damon has been very kind in doing various things.
Mm-hmm.
As you probably know, he came back and did a show for us at the Sixth Form College.
Yep.
And which raised money for an orphanage in India.
Yeah.
And that was interesting because, first of all, I approached him and said, look, would you come and just sign a few autographs and things? You'd do an appearance and maybe a talk with other people. And he said, no, I want to do a musical thing. Why don't we get your orchestra, he said, your college orchestra to play accompaniments to some of my numbers.
Wow.
And they could also do some arrangements. So I had to do this secretly, obviously. I couldn't tell them. So I got some of my music students to write, and they wrote some really good arrangements of some of the... It was the time of Park Life.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was all that era.
Yeah.
And they wrote a number of arrangements, and I helped with one or two arrangements as well. And then we got the orchestra, and I rehearsed it with the orchestra. I said, right, now we'll do it in the same keys as they used as performing them and blah, blah, blah. And then literally a day before the event, and we'd done lots of preparation, finding out security and everything else, I said to the kids, keep tomorrow afternoon free. We are performing. And they said, oh, I'm not sure I've got to go and do this. No. I said, no. Keep tomorrow afternoon free. It'll be worth it. It'll be worth it. And then I said, right, okay, all right, I'm going to tell you. And it's not to be disclosed until tomorrow, but we've got Blur coming to play and you're playing on stage with them. And there was this,
hush.
Whoa. And I got an orchestra on stage and we rehearsed with the band and that was quite fun.
I think it was, to say the least.
I mean, it was all recorded, as you know, because the BBC Kaleidoscope programme did it. So it was quite weird because after that I heard sort of people would contact me and say, oh, heard you on World Service today. And I thought, what? Hey? Yeah.
Did the whole band come?
Yeah.
Including Dave Rowntree? Because the only thing I have in common with Blur is that Dave Rowntree is or was a Labour councillor.
All right, okay. Well, Dave...
He's a drummer, isn't he?
I get on very well with Dave, actually. He's very nice.
He is the drummer.
Yes, he is. And he went to the Guildford School.
Oh, did he? I didn't...
Yeah, so when he came into play at the Sixth Form College, of course, the gymnasium was the old gymnasium for the Guildford.
Yeah, of course it was.
So he went, this is really freaking me out. He's back at school, you know.
Wow.
So he was great, yes.
Other alumni?
Other alumni.
That you're particularly proud of?
Oh, well, there's a few, actually. There's quite a few. I mean, you know, there's a number I've had contact through the youth orchestra.
Yeah.
People like Michael England.
Yeah.
Who directed the original West End shows. He did Les Miserables, and he did the Knights of the Round Table and all that lot, you know, Monty Python things. He did all those.
Now you've got me, of course.
Yes, of course I do. I've got your attention there.
Darren Gooding and Phil Toms, who are going to be guests on this podcast, you also taught them, we found out in recent times.
Well, I didn't teach Phil Toms.
You didn't?
I was his examiner. I turned up at Keggs School in Chelmsford and I was his music A-level examiner. And that's happened to a couple of people.
Oh, right. Yes, because at my Zoom birthday party, which was a landmark birthday, I'm not going to remember which one.
Yeah, right.
You said he was playing some Monty Python tunes, and you said it was enough to take his A-level away from him, which was one of the funniest lines of the night. So, yes.
It was a jest, I have to say.
Yeah, no, he's very, over that. He is very talented, Phil.
Very, very talented.
How many instruments do you play, Nigel?
Properly, I play the flute, the violin, the viola, and the piano.
Well, I've seen you do percussion.
Oh, percussion as well. Yes, I suppose so. Yes.
Doesn't that count? Well, every percussionist listening to this is thinking, what?
Not. Well, I'm not a true percussionist. That's why I'm saying, I'm not saying it. I mean, properly.
Yeah.
I can play timpani. I can play some element of kit, but I'm not really a kit player.
So
I had to learn kit.
Yeah.
because when I was teaching at Headingham School, I did a rock opera called The Damnation of Jonathan Fist, as on the Faust legend.
Okay.
And we were performing its, I think, first night at Headingham School. And the drummer who'd been hired to come in was bringing my wife's cousin as well. She was also being brought in, but given a lift. And they had a collision on the way in, sadly, and were quite seriously injured, which meant, of course, that night we had no drummer.
Right.
So that night I had no drummer. I knew that. And we just went ahead without a drummer, because a rock opera without drums is a bit weak.
Not going to work.
Right. And now we had a drums kit there. So I said, right, I'm going to learn it. So for the second night, I played drums.
Wow.
Which is, you know, the way it goes. You know, you just have to get on with it. I'm going to say I'm not a kit player. I'm not a particularly good kit player because I don't practice it.
No. There is another drummer. If we can come on to this now, because I want to come back to, there's loads of wants to start, and we've got to fit in a quick fire question, and time is just runs away with this on this podcast. Another drummer who you are associated with, who calls himself one of the worst drummers in the world, has been sacked from every band he's drummed with, is the director of the Art Centre.
Yes, Anthony Roberts, yes.
Yeah, and
yes,
you are chair of the board of the Art Centre and have been for some time.
I have been from far too many years, probably.
The Art Centre has already been bigged up by previous guests on this podcast.
Yeah.
And it's part of what this podcast is about, cultural Colchester. And the Art Centre seems absolutely pivotal and central to what Colchester and culture is all about. You must love it, having been chair of the board for so many years and working with the phenomenon that is Anthony Roberts. Tell us about your work in the Art Centre and what you love about it.
Okay. I need to go back one stage, if I may.
Of course.
I got involved with arts management and arts enterprises through Keith Albarn, Damon's father.
Dad, yeah.
Yes, because Keith and I were quite good friends. And Keith, as you know, was head of the art department. And as a young teacher coming into Stanway, he sort of befriended me and said, look, I think you ought to think about, you know, being involved in the management side of arts and being involved in that. So he introduced me, first of all, to a thing called the Essex Festival, which was a festival of literacy and literary poetry and that. But it also included music, and they got me to invite musicians in. And we worked through various things there. That was both with a guy called Joe Allard, who was at the university.
Right.
So he got me involved. And one of the things he got me involved with was on the board of the Art Centre. And I went along to a couple of board meetings. And I was always struck by what was going on. It was quite a very laid-back environment. The director at the time was Anita Tebbutt. She was Anita before that.
Yeah.
And I sort of got involved, and the guy who was in charge of whose chair of it was John Burton. After about two or three years, John Burton said, well, I'm going to step down. And they decided that they would thrust me into the position of being chair. This was a particularly difficult time for the Art Centre. I ought to say this. I was literally walking up from the Sixth Form College where I'd newly started my post there, walking up to the Art Centre, and they would supervise the count of money to see whether we could actually have enough to pay the people for that week. I mean, it was as bad as that. Yeah, we were looking at assets we could possibly sell or possibly negotiate, and we were in huge debt.
Yeah.
And
so this is about late 80s?
Yes, late 80s.
Because Anthony joined in 91.
That's right. So it was about 88, 89.
Yeah.
And I appointed a new director. Anita went, she turned gatekeeper, as it were. She went over to the borough council.
She did indeed.
And we appointed Kevin Sadler, who was a teacher that I knew, a music teacher, very good. And he came in as the new director. Oh, and he instigated a whole range of changes. For example, we closed the cafe. Up until that point, there had been a cafe in the Art Centre operating all day, which meant you had people coming in for their cup of coffee in the morning and staying all day with having had one cup of coffee. And it wasn't really cost-effective, and it wasn't really what the Art Centre was really about. So Kevin said, I'm closing it. And it caused a huge row.
Huge fuss.
people resigned their posts, and we had various people lobbying us and lobbying the borough council to withdraw our grant because we were no longer a community venue. I went with Kevin to a meeting of the borough council to discuss this. And I was put against the then director of finance, whose name I've temporarily forgotten. But
was it Robin Paddock?
No, I don't think it was.
No, okay. He was the first one I encountered.
Yeah, okay, right. And this guy said, well, for a start, he said, you want to turn over your bar. Your bar is being run by yourselves and that's no good. It's a way of losing money because everyone drinks the bar dry. And we thought about this and said, no, the opposite is true. We want to take it all in, get rid of the licensee, take it as our own license and use the bar as a way of gathering income. And this has been a great model and I don't regret that for one moment. It was the way we saved the arts centre in many respects. Yeah. I then went to the borough council, a full borough council meeting, and they were discussing the arts centre and what to do about our £40,000 deficit. And I said, well, you've got two choices, I said. You can either write off our debts and back us, or I can make a present of the art centre to you here and now. And you can work out what to do with the debt and the art centre. And they chose to wipe off most of the debt. And within a few years, we managed to get our head above water. Mm-hmm. But it was an interesting exercise.
Yeah,
and I was
quite stressful, I think.
Very stressful, and I learned an awful lot about management and everything else. So then we appointed Anthony Roberts and everything.
You are to blame, Nigel.
Well, no, I'm not entirely to blame.
For appointing Anthony Roberts.
But I'm one of the people to blame, yes. It was on the committee that appointed him. And his comment about being a worse drummer was one of the things that attracted me to him, in the sense that, you know, I thought this is a guy that's not going to be off doing drumming sessions or whatever. Although he did a fair amount of acting during his time.
He's a good actor.
And he is. And we supported that quite considerably.
Regretted the appointment.
I have never regretted the appointment for one moment. He and I get on very well. We, by nature, we have to be arm's length. In the sense that I'm the person that would have to reprimand him if there were to be a problem. And ditto, he comes to me when there are problems, and there have been.
Yeah.
We've had to sack people, we've had to dismiss them, we've had to deal with drugs issues in the past, in the long past, so that's good. But we had to do these things. And therefore, I had to be the person as chair that made the decisions and sometimes had to step in a little bit and act as the person who acted on the Arts Centre's behalf. But it's been very useful. He and I have a great deal of trust, and that's really important for a chair.
A chair and chief executive director.
I mean, obviously, in the next few years, we'll have to look at sort of renewing the trust and certainly in terms of finding people to replace both of us because, you know, we can't go on forever.
We were hoping you can.
Oh, it's not going to happen immediately.
It's a huge
success
story, the Arts Centre.
But it has been good. And Anthony, without a doubt, knows how to market things. Because that's a secret. If you can get people in. And I think the adventurous range of arts activities that we have are really important. And that's been so valid in making us. Obviously, we've had lots of good things as well. I mean, you know, to have Coldplay play in their origin, being one of the biggest bands in the world.
Yeah. I saw Eddie Izzard there when he was...
Yes, Eddie
just came before he really broke through.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, I saw him when he did his three languages thing. And I was actually there for all three. I heard him in French and German and in English as well.
Yeah, because he started off in Franglais, really, because he's learned these languages through performance, really.
Yeah.
Nigel, we better, because time is just whizzing past, we better do the quick fire round and then we'll get on to some of your other amazing achievements. Right, so this is called Your Favourite Things. As a nod to Julie Andrews and Sound of Music. So there's 10, and then I throw in a curveball at the end. Right, so you haven't got to think about too much, just the first thing that comes into your head. Favourite musical instrument?
Piano.
Favourite play?
Romeo and Juliet.
Book?
The Pyramid. Menkel.
Oh, right. Don't know that. There's so many, I'm going to have to go away and look up, research afterwards. TV show?
It's got to be Monty Python, really.
Yeah, it has got to be Monty Python, you're absolutely right. Favourite piece of music?
I haven't got one. I love different pieces. Oh, let's say Rachmaninoff Symphony No. 2.
Rachmaninoff Symphony No. 2. Okay. I'll look that up. Favourite film?
Dr. Zhivago.
Oh, lovely film. Omar Sharif. Julie Christie?
Yeah,
brilliant. Favourite gig at the Arts Centre that you've been to?
That I've been to, attended? Yes. I think it was a couple of years ago, actually. There was a band called John Hackett.
Uh-huh.
And John is a friend of mine. He was a flatmate of mine back in Sheffield.
Wow.
And he came, and I arranged the gig because the prog rock gig, and it was absolutely brilliant.
Really? You've lost me now with prog rock. I had to listen to so much prog rock because my brother was into prog rocker. I was so glad when punk came along. favourite meal?
Schnitzel.
Oh, nice.
Right. I once did, for the Twinning Society meal, I did cook 40 schnitzel.
We must come on to the Twinning Society later. Right, this is the one that has thrown the guests so far. Let's see if you can. Favourite famous person with the name Nigel?
I haven't got one, because the one I hate is the one that everyone would know as Nigel. Nigel Havers.
Nigel Havers is very good, yes. Excellent. That's a good one. He does a show now, The Bidding Room, and that's quite good. It's not up to repair shop standards, but it's very good, Nigel. And he was great in Corrie.
Oh, well, I didn't know that.
Favourite comedy sketch?
The Parrot.
Yeah, you're so with me, Nigel. And your curveball is favourite decomposing composer?
Shostakovich.
I just don't know Shostakovich. And he's a 20th century composer.
Yes, he was born in 1907. So, and he was obviously a product of the Russian Revolution.
Yeah, of course.
In the sense that he did his first symphony when he was 16 as a graduation at the St. Petersburg Conservatoire, as it was then.
Mm-hmm.
And that was his first symphony. Amazing, witty piece of music. Oh, fantastic.
Right.
Think Prokofiev as well. It's sort of similar.
Okay.
And then, of course, the revolution happened. He stayed in Russia. He was very much a Soviet composer. But, of course, he was subject to the wrath of Stalin, who didn't understand his music at all.
A lot of people were subject to the wrath of Stalin. Yeah, millions. Yeah, well, that's amazing. He's not in the song, Shostakovich. Probably couldn't rhyme him.
No.
But
he probably wasn't dead at that stage.
He probably wasn't. No. So everybody who's listening to this podcast, get and listen to Shostakovich. Nigel Hildreth says so. Let's talk about the Twinning Society for a bit. What is your role within the Twinning Society?
Well, I'm chair of the Twinning Society. I've been involved in twinning for 30 years, but not on the outside rather than as part of the membership such. In the sense that the youth orchestra, Khan Valley Youth Orchestra, which we also should mention, which is 40 years old this year, went to Wetzlar and to Avignon and has played in Imola as well. Mm-hmm. So the orchestra was my link musically with twinning. And therefore, I sort of said, well, yeah, I'll get involved with twinning. And they sort of brought me in a little bit. And I volunteered to act as treasurer for 1 year. And then they said, no. We don't like you on the books. We'll do you as you can be the chairman instead. So I'm now chairman. I have been for about 4 years.
Well, the mayor. You told me this before we started the interview. Is the president?
Yes, the honorary president.
So if and when I'm fortunate enough to be mayor, which is due to be next year, I will become president of the Twinning Society.
Correct.
That must fill people with horror. But never mind, I will do my best because I've never been to Avignon or Wetzlar or Imola.
Well, you've got a treat in store for you because they're all three fantastic venues. I mean, Avignon is well known, it's world famous.
Because of the song. Because of the paper.
But it's also, it's like us, it's got a town wall.
Yeah.
Which you can walk around and...
Okay.
And that's quite amazing. It's got fantastic medieval buildings and museums. We're trying to build a link at the moment with their one of their museums, the Musée Calvet, with the Holly Trees Museum.
Oh, right.
Because it's sort of, there's a link there in terms of... And the Calvet were hoping to find some paintings that have been done by a British painter for their exhibition. They thought they were at Holly Trees, but they don't seem to be there. So all sorts of things have disappeared.
Something to look forward to.
And Wetzlar is a half-timbered old town. It's the centre of the Leica factory. And there's a Leica museum there, which is the cameras, fantastic cameras, and optical wear. So if you go around Wetzlar, there are various optical devices around with optical illusions and all sorts of
things.
And
they have a beer fest, don't they?
They have a wine festival.
In Wetzlar?
Yeah, Wetzlar. They have a wine festival.
As you know, I'm teetotal, so...
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
They'll give me a glass of water.
Yep.
well, that's really something to look forward to.
Yes.
Let's... Calm Valley Youth Orchestra.
Yes.
Going 40 years.
Yep.
Did you...
I founded it. Yeah, I founded it. When I moved from Headingham School to Stanway School, I thought it's a shame to lose the orchestra that I'd actually developed, and invited them along with Halstead Ramsey School as well. Mm-hmm. And we were a while at Ramsey School, and then we had to find another venue, and we went for a venue which was Colnengain Primary School, because that was a parent was the head teacher of that school. Mm-hmm. So we went there and rehearsed there for a while, and then we moved more and more. When I came to the Sixth Form College, we rehearsed at the Sixth Form College and been there ever since.
Do you like getting your baton out, don't you?
Oh, I do like getting the baton out.
Yes. Yeah. How many piece orchestra is it?
Well, in its heyday, it's small at the moment because of COVID.
Of course.
We're only allowed to rehearse 15 people together. So we've got an orchestra of 15, 16 people. Mm-hmm. And we have a training orchestra as well, which is rather good. So younger kids who haven't had the opportunity of playing any ensemble can come along to the training orchestra. And we try a come and try event every year, although we haven't been able to do that this year again.
Of course not.
It's been a real bad year for us, and we hope that we can...
So in its heyday, it was how many
people? Oh, I had 70 people in the orchestra. It was a big orchestra.
Yeah.
I mean, we went on tour to
Prague. You've done big venues, haven't you?
We've played we've played in the Czech Republic. We've played in Holland, Germany, France, Belgium, Sweden, and Estonia.
And the Charter Hall.
And, of course, the Charter Hall, yes. Yeah, well, Colchester. And we played in various castles as well. It's been quite
excellent. Including Colchester Castle?
No.
We might have to sort that out.
We sort that one out, yes. I think it'll be a good one. Now they've changed the layout. We could do that.
Absolutely could do it.
Yeah.
The $64,000 question, Nigel, which we've touched on, why is Colchester this magnet for creative, for culture, for arts, do you think? Why?
I think it's partly the schools, education. At one point, we had more people taking A-level music in Colchester than any other town in the country.
Wow, I did
not
know
point,
that.
At one point. It's no longer the case.
Yeah.
Because we had an A-level course being run at the Institute, at the two grammar schools, and at Sixth Form College.
Yeah.
And the Sixth Form College obviously attracted people from all the other schools. And some of the grammar school students as well came there. But, you know, we were running in tandem. And then the Institute decided to change their A-level approach. And therefore, we have more people who are doing A-level music.
So it's partly education. Is it partly the venues? Is it partly geography? I mean, I've had a number of theories thrown at me.
In terms of venues, we're actually very poorly served.
You think?
Yes, I think. I mean, we've got the arts.
Headgate, First Sight, Mercury, Arts Centre.
Yeah, but they're not concert venues.
No, they're not.
There's no concert venue in the town.
Charter Hall.
Charter Hall is not a concert venue. It's multi. I remember being involved in when they were designing it, and I said, hang on, it's the wrong way around, because it's that way around for the audience rather than vertically. I said, where are the changing rooms for the orchestra? And they said, oh, we're not having any of those. We don't need changing rooms at the back for orchestras and things. They can change in the dry changing rooms up the top, you know, with the squash people.
With the badminton and squash people.
And I said, no, you can't do that. So actually, my lasting legacy is a small carbuncle off the back of the Charter Hall, which is changing rooms and loos. Because I said, you can't have anything front of house if you've got an orchestra.
Where is the nearest concert hall?
Snape.
Really, it's as far as Snape.
Yes.
So we haven't got
a proper concert hall.
There must be one in Essex, or not?
No, not really.
There is not a proper concert hall in Essex. That's something we ought to do something about.
Well, I always argue
because Essex gets this bad rep, doesn't it?
It does,
and we are a cultural oasis. Sorry to mention Oasis.
No, you don't.
Feel the glare of that.
But certainly there was a one point there was a mention of the old Odeon. Turning it into a concert hall.
Yeah.
And that would have been an absolutely ideal venue. I'm sure it won't happen.
No.
I mean, there's no money for it and everything else. But it is a shame that we haven't got a decent concert hall. Because, I mean, the Mercury is not a concert venue.
No.
It's designed for spoken word.
Yeah.
And that's great. But it's not a sort of venue that's ideal for music.
Mm-hmm.
The Arts Centre is great, but it is small.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. It can't hold a big. I mean, you couldn't get a symphony orchestra.
So if you were going to have it would have to be Charter Hall with all its deficiencies.
Yes.
So yeah, well, something that the good folk of Essex need to look at, I think.
Well, I think they should do, but whether they will. Yeah. I mean, the Ipswich,
because London is
Ipswich has got the Regent, of course.
Yeah.
And that works as a big venue.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's a rock venue.
It is a rock venue,
but it's not really a concert hall.
No. I want to end on a couple of things. I want to end on the Teddy Bears Picnic. How long has the Teddy Bears Picnic been going now?
Not well, apart from this year, of course.
Yeah.
We did it. We managed to do it last year.
Did you?
We managed to do it because it was in February, you see.
It's lovely.
And it's a fantastic event, as you know, where
people
we invite
bring their teddy bears.
The young children and families come along and they have their first introduction to a live concert, which I think is so important.
Wonderful.
And it's young people performing for the most part.
And it's at the Arts Centre, isn't
it? At the Arts Centre. Yeah. And we've had it there for about 5 or 6 years now.
Brilliant.
And before that, we were at the Town Hall, Moot Hall, until they suddenly said, no, we're going to charge you for that.
We didn't even mention that in venues, did we, the Moot Hall?
No, the Moot Hall now. Well, you know, we'll see why. but also, before that was at Charter Hall. It went to Charter Hall for a while. And the Borough Council paid for it to be at the Charter Hall. They then said, no, okay, well, let's have it at the Moot Hall. And then they said, no, there's no money for that. So we took it to the Arts Centre, and it's been a fantastic success at the Arts Centre because we were able to put mats down and things for the kids to sit on.
It is so lovely.
And we get the kids up to conduct. The teddies all dance around to various pieces of music. We talk about fast and slow and high and low. And we sing songs as well. And I'm not a singer. But
you are a singer, Nigel.
But we can do things like the Teddy Bears Picnic, of course.
Yes, of course.
And we do the Ugly Duckling.
Oh, classic.
And, of course, I've also written a thing called Giraffes Can't Dance, which is from the Giles Andre poem.
Sounds amazing.
And we're going on a bear hunt.
Oh, of course.
Which is very famous.
Michael Rosen.
Michael Rosen, absolutely. And so I've done arrangements of those for the orchestra. A singer, and for the kids to join in.
Wonderful. Well, certainly so much that you've contributed to Colchester's cultural life. Let's end on the future then. What are your plans? I know you are musical director for a sketch comedy troupe.
So I understand, yes. I tried to resign.
And you're going to sing the idiot song for us at our next,
in
July.
That will be something. And I've also got something else on my sleeve as well, because I always know there's going to be a situation where they've suddenly got to change costumes backstage and get into the position for this one. And they said, Nigel, do you mind just filling in this bit?
Yes. I have to mention my brother is the director of this show, so he demands things from Nigel.
As you know, we did show a few years ago. We did the first one, and that went very well.
It did.
And then the second one, they sort of gave me much more to do. And I said, hang on, I'm running out of all my musical jokes here, all my... Bits and bits of vulgar things.
And a classic Cook and More sketch with Darren, yes, we did. The old pupil teacher thing. And what else have you got planned then?
So what other things? Well, obviously the youth orchestra is keeping a lot of occupation. We're trying to get a reunion together in September. We're going to find a good venue for that. Possibly the Minories.
Nice.
Not the Minories. Can't go to the Minories. That's closed completely.
For the moment?
No, for the foreseeable future, I'm told.
So where are you going? First night?
Possibly. It's very expensive again. That's the problem.
Well, when I interview Sally, I'll have a word with her for you.
So in September, we're doing a reunion. It's 40 years, as I say.
Yeah.
So we've got to get some people together. I'm hoping that Damon will come to that, but we'll see.
Touch wood. Nigel, that has been marvellous. Thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
That's this episode with Nigel Hildreth, MBE, the Colchester, Cultural Colchester podcast. Join us again soon. Thanks very much, Nigel.